So good morning, everyone. Last month when I talked, I did part one of a talk. And today I'm not going to do part two. I looked at it and really didn't think it fit for what I was thinking about and where I was at these days. You know, it was last month's talk was on Lin Shi, true person of no rank, and then I was going to look at a couple poems written by some Zen teachers some hundreds of years later, but I've gone a different direction, or actually I don't know that I've gone a different direction, but my pen did. So here's today's talk. It is said, the Buddha was enlightened while sitting under a tree, the tree of Bodhi. According to lesser known legends, the Buddha was born and also died under special trees. Maya, pregnant with her son-to-be, was on her way to her family's home to give birth. While walking, she saw a tree filled with flowering buds, and she wandered over to look more closely. On approaching the tree, she pulled down a branch to smell the flowers. And with the reaching, in that moment, she felt her first labor pains and laid down and gave birth under the fragrant flowering. Shakyamuni Buddha, while on pilgrimage in his 80th year, and knowing that the end of his life was near, instructed Ananda to prepare a bed for him in the Sala Grove at Kusinagara. As the Buddha lay down at the foot of twin Sala trees, the trees not yet in season nevertheless bloomed and rained flowers upon his body. And it was beneath these two twin trees that he died. You know, of course, these trees didn't have to flower for the Buddha's birth or death. Nothing extra had to be added. Nothing extra ever has to be added. Yet nevertheless, they flowered in abundance. And this is the root of generosity. And when we realize our own innate abundance, with each step, flowers bloom. With each word we speak, flowers tumble to the ground. And our only task as we sit here is to remember the abundance which is already present. Dogen said the Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The whole universe is moistened with nectar, and the truth is ready to be harvested. So the truth, the fact of the matter, is already here. And not is it only here, it is altogether delightful and ready to be accepted. Take me. Take me, chirps the swallow darting after mosquitoes. Or me, take me, calls the gull. Or me, the flowering fragrant Daphne. Each thing, it, calling, take me, with no need of subject, object, or activity. Just simply as itself. Where is the subject and object? In the great horned owl's midnight call. Where is the subject and object in the delight of a child's first somersault? or in laying down to rest after a day of pruning apple trees. Where is the subject? Where is the object, and where is the need for activity? In the old days, trees were the temples for the old sitters and practitioners. In the Buddha's time, practitioners didn't sit indoors. They would go to old sacred gardens and find a wide-spreading tree filled with life, filled with birds and monkeys, filled with flowers and fruit. And there they would make that place, that spreading tree's limbs, the zendo, the dojo. Or they would go to an ancient forest grove and they make that place into the temple. Quite a beautiful way to sit and practice and live. So trees, sacred gardens, and Zen practitioners share a long and deep affinity for each other. One time there was a Buddhist nun named Sukha. She lived during the time of the Buddha. She was said to have come from a wealthy family, and her name means bright or lustrous. When Sukha was a young girl, she heard the Buddha speak in such a grove, and she joined the Sangha as a lay disciple. Later on, as she matured, she was ordained by Dhammadina, a nun famous for her eloquence. And I'd like to sidetrack for a moment and tell you about this woman, Dhammadina, before we go back to Sukha. As a lay woman, Dhammadina had been the wife of Visakha. One day, her husband returned home, having heard a sermon of a new religious teacher named Gautama. Normally, when Visakha returned, he would smile if he saw Dhammadina standing in the window. But on this day, he passed without looking. When he entered the door, Dhammadina held out her hand and welcomed him. But Visakha did not respond. He must be angry about something, thought Dhammadina. I'll find out when we sit down to eat at the meal. When Dhammadina served the usual boiled rice, it was customary for Visakha to invite her to join him. But instead, he ate in silence, not uttering a word. After the meal, Visakha called Dhammadina to his side and said that upon hearing Gautama speak, he had experienced something. He wasn't exactly sure what, and he was thinking about becoming a monk. Henceforth, he said, he would not touch a woman. If he renounced the world, all the wealth of the house would be hers, he said. She could remain here or return to her family, whatever she wanted. So what will you do? He asked. And she said, I wish too to renounce the world. And she went to join a community of nuns. Resolving to take up her new life in earnest, Dhammadina retreated to a large grove of trees and practiced intensively until she reached the deepest insights. Sometime afterwards, she returned to her hometown and revisited her former husband. Visakha, it turned out, had decided not to become a monk. Still, his curiosity about that way of practice was genuine, and he eagerly put questions to her about the Buddha's teaching. These she answered, "It is written, as easily as one would cut a lotus stalk with a knife." And finally, after question after answer after question after answer, he finally said, "What is meditation?" And Dhammadina said, "Meditation is the focusing of the heart." Meditation is the relaxing of the heart. Meditation is the stopping. Stop. And then he asked about nirvana. And Dhammadina said, "You will never get to the end of your questions. I cannot tell you how salt or sugar tastes. You must realize it yourself. And you do this by focusing the heart. You do this by stopping." Stop. Later, when the Buddha was told of these responses, he said he would have answered exactly as she did. By having won the Buddha's complete approval, Dhammadina's response was declared Buddha-vacana, literally, the word of the Buddha. She went on to teach for many years and was known to be eloquent in word. And she had many, many, many students, men and women, monks and nuns, and lay people. And Sukha was one of her students, and said to be second in eloquence only to the Buddha and Dhammadina. Eventually, Sukha assumed the leadership of a large following of nuns. And one day, when she returned home with her companions from collecting alms, Sukha began to preach. She spoke so beautifully that her listeners were enchanted, and even a tree at the edge of the gathering was inspired to go striding through the streets and alleys of the town, praising her excellence and clarity in the Buddha way. These two stories, the story of Dhammadina and Sukha, are quite lovely for many reasons. It is important for us to know and hear of our women teachers. These are our great, great, great grandmothers in the Dharma. And these are only two of the many women who hold our Zazen in their arms. They help to create this form that we practice. And for that, we can be grateful. The main thread in these two stories for me, however, is the generosity of Dhammadina and Sukha, and certainly the generosity of the walking tree. Like the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree, neither of these women had to go about preaching. They could have easily found quiet places in the forests and stayed there, leading simple and peaceful lives. And certainly the walking tree could have stayed rooted in the deep, nutrient-rich soil and enjoyed her life swaying with the wind. Yet each chose to stand up. Each chose to come off the zafu and give. And this standing up and giving is similar to the sala trees in the place the Buddha lay down to die, bursting with fragrant flowers, even though out of season. You may be out of season, not feeling quite mature yet, not fully ripe, but nevertheless, out of season, the solid trees came bursting forth with fragrant flowers, just as you do when you choose to stand up with open hands, with warm hearts. And what you do next is you stand up with open hands and warm hearts. Need not be eloquent. Need not be terribly important. It can simply be cooking or sweeping. It can be simply talking with a neighbor. Yet wet when done with open hands, when done with warm hearts, you're activating. And as importantly, or maybe more importantly, you're manifesting one of the major tenets of our practice and of our lives and of being human. You're manifesting generosity.